This free program is paid for by the listener sponsors of WORT, Community Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. If you haven't already, please consider donating online to help keep Radio of the Free alive.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Heartland Credit Union, a full-service community financial cooperative owned by more than 15,000 members. Offices are downtown at the corner of Bedford and West Washington, in the Third Lake Market on Williamson Street, in Verona and Dodgeville, on the web at heartlandcu.org, federally insured by NCUA.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Just Coffee, Madison's worker-owned fair trade coffee roaster. Just Coffee supports and celebrates various community groups and area schools with fundraiser coffees. Fair trade coffee from around the world, roasted daily in Madison, 204-9011 or justcoffee.net.
6'6" above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take it to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard.
Good afternoon and welcome to a very special edition of A Public Affair. I'm your host, Chris Doles, and in the studio today, we now have three guests. We expect that to, at its height, become six guests and perhaps go back down to three or four towards the end of the show. They are the student activists of the Campus Anti-War Network, or I should say we are the student activists of the Campus Anti-War Network. I am very privileged today to have in the studio many of my collaborators in the Campus Anti-War Network, and we are the folks who are putting on tomorrow's student walkout. We're going to go to a little Bob Dylan while we get some engineering set up here because we don't have enough headphones in the studio. We're going to get all set up. Stick around. Pull over if you're driving and get on the phone, call up, join the conversation, because we're going to be talking about why we're making the demands that we're making of the university and of Senator Cole. Let's go to Bob Dylan for now. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Stick around for the show.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
All right, I think we're all set here in the studio. We're sharing some headphones. Like I said, we got a packed house today. with activists, students of the Campus Anti-War Network. Why don't we go around and introduce ourselves real briefly, say your name, and maybe a quick little bit about why you're going to be walking out of class tomorrow. I guess I'll introduce myself. I'm the host, Christopher Doles, and I'm an activist with the Campus Anti-War Network, as are the rest of my guests. Tomorrow's the big day. We've been building for it for some time, 1 o'clock. Wednesday, April 18th, that's tomorrow. We've been saying that a lot, and it's getting closer, and it's getting exciting. And we're asking the students at the University of Wisconsin and other campuses in Madison to walk out of classes, to walk out of work, and to come and join us because we've got to organize against the war. Let's go around. Zach, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Zach Heise, and I guess I could say that I'm the newer member of the Campus Anti-War Network. I joined back in January to join in some of the marching in Washington, and I've marched on the Pentagon as well. And I'm really looking forward to walking out. I think it's going to be a big thing for the campus here. I'm really hoping that we can increase our membership, basically just get more education about the facts going on, and I'm really pleased to be here today.
Hi, my name is Laurel Franklin. And I'm also a recent member of Campus Anti-War Network. I'm really excited for tomorrow as well because we have some awesome things set up, and I really feel like we're going to make some changes tomorrow because we have hip-hop artists coming out, we have bands coming out, we have a march planned to Senator Cole's office, and we also have poetry, and Mark Bamuti, a hip-hop revolutionist, will be speaking. And we just have a big, diverse group of people all coming together for the same cause. And it's just, it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be big.
My name is Paul Price. I'm a fairly long-time member of the Campus Anti-War Network. I'm very excited about tomorrow's demonstration. I think that tomorrow we can set the model for demonstrations in the future. I think that UW Madison Campus Anti-War Network can really be kind of the vanguard of the student anti-war movement, and that we can set the example for future demonstrations, and I'm very proud of the people in this group for that.
Absolutely. So today's show, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about tomorrow's walkout among the students at the University of Wisconsin, and really for those of us in this room right now, We've all been in basically a 3-week-long conversation, right? You know, through meetings and our chalkings and putting up posters and just walking over here. We were talking about, you know, why we say out now and what are the arguments against that. And I just hope that we can continue the ongoing conversation that we've been having and include you, the listeners, in on it. We're going to have a little bit of music. We're going to have, like I said, more people coming in. So if you got any questions for us, the student anti-war activists, then please call in at 256-2001. So call on up, and if you're listening online, you too can call in. We're gonna open up the air. You know, the phone lines are open, but let's start with the demands. We have 6 demands of Senator Cole's office. We've got 4 demands of the University of Wisconsin. Anybody got a favorite demand they wanna talk about?
Well, I think one of our most pertinent demands is the demand for the university that we kick Halliburton off campus. Halliburton, obviously one of the major war profiteers in this war right now, will be coming to the university to recruit some bright young minds to work in their war profiteering industry. I think what this demonstration can do is probably be a segue and a kickoff to another demonstration in the future that students will come out and directly oppose the war profiteers on our campus.
How about you, Zach? Any things you're looking forward to about tomorrow?
Well, I'm just looking forward to being out there. And one thing that I enjoy doing is I like getting the crowd kind of fired up, that sort of thing. For me, I'll be honest, I got started with this here just when I saw this gross economic waste that this war was causing for our country. And for the students, you know, the students are a big part of this, too, our tuition going up. The most recent statistics I saw was in Wisconsin all by itself. At the University of Wisconsin-Madison, this war so far could have funded 12,000 full ride scholarships. to UW-Madison students, and I just thought that those numbers were appalling here. I mean, we're looking at $3,000 being spent a second here, so I just want to get out there, and I really want to try to appear to everybody as, you know, the voice of, like, let's look at this, you know, both from the very moralistic perspective, which is definitely a good thing, but looking at this economically here, we have to see just how crazy this is. And so I really want to get out there and really make it clear to people just what our tuition is going towards.
And it's not just the American economy either, also the Iraqi economy.
Very true.
I mean, Iraqis aren't even being hired by the American corporations that are there to supposedly rebuild their country. You know, they're bringing in labor from the United States, where they're paying, you know, private contractors enormous amounts of money, and then they're paying the workers for those contractors, you know, a pittance, which I think gets at some of the central ideas of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think I heard this one anecdote one time from a soldier who had been to Iraq. He supported the war, and he said that, well, he found it inspiring that every day, even though there were suicide attacks on the Iraqi police stations, every day Iraqis were out there lining up, volunteering to be part of the Iraqi police. And I just thought to myself, well, you know, in a country where you've got unemployment, you know, twice the levels of the Great Depression here in the United States, of course people are going to be lining up to be part of the Iraqi police. You know, we've devastated their economy. We've brought in foreign contractors, cheap labor from other countries, taking their jobs. You know, it's no wonder that there are so many people who are volunteering for the Iraqi police for no other reason than just because of the complete, you know, economic deprivation that's been, you know, been brought about on the country by the U.S.
Two of our biggest demands are actually locally. We are entirely against recruiters coming on our campus and taking our youth and our generation into a war that is illegal and unjust and immoral, and they're going to be dying for just an unjust cause. It's one thing if it was a courageous, heroic war fighting for your country and standing up for what is right, but this is wrong, and we need to keep our educated youth out of this war. And another big demand of ours is just to get out of Iraq now. We're not interested in any of these plans for a year from now, 2 years from now, even months from now, because as long as we're funding and supporting this war, even if it's in the name of, it, you know, we're planning to get out, it's still, you know, promoting war as opposed to peace. We want to get out now. The Iraqis can control and decide on what happens to their own country. We made some mistakes, and we need to get out now, and we're not going to stop. We're not going to stop. We're not going to let counter-recruitments come on now, and we are fighting for out today. Not tomorrow, not next year, not in 2 years, today.
There are a lot of debates within the anti-war movement about those last 2 points, and I hope that we get a chance to hash them out. Why we say now, what we think would happen when the United States leaves. But we have a couple of callers, so let's bring them on the air. KP, can we bring them on the air? We'll bring them on the air shortly. Let's bring them on, yeah. Hello, caller.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say that the President's Advisory Commission that he didn't pay any attention to, and the Democrats, are both demanding benchmarks on the part of the Democratic government, which in itself is paradoxical, because you don't tell a sovereign Democratic government what to do. We were there to set up that, and now we're saying we've got to tell them what to do, and if they don't, you know, that to me is one of the big lies going on here. Now the rationale has switched from setting up democracy and training their own military, which we've done to the tune of 325,000, but they won't do their job, which is why this expansion of the war on the part of America has to go forward, because they're not going to do anything except engage in civil war. But the point is, if you look at the Shiites, al-Sadr today removed all his representatives out of the parliament in Iraq. Last week, al-Sistani said, I am not going to support rebathification of the government. They're going to keep the Sunni Baathists out of the government. The point is, both of these guys are saying that our big allies, who are the Shiites now, are not going to be complying with any of these so-called benchmarks. What this means inevitably is we are going to be involved in the same mess we are in which is stability for control of their oil, which they believe, which I believe, which all the other people in the majority of the countries in this world believe, forever. And you know, the sick thing about all this is I listen to Obama and I listen to Hillary Clinton, and sure, both of them are saying, well, perhaps we'll have to have people in Iraq there forever.
Thank you very much for your comments. Let's bring one more caller on quickly because I see the phones are lighting up. Go ahead.
Is that me?
That's you.
Also, in terms of the big lies that form the pretext for this global domination project and oil and so forth, can anybody in the group reflect on the big lies surrounding 9/11 and how it wasn't those alleged bunch of Saudi young people that were hijacking those planes?
That's
the
a
explosions
great,
in the buildings. Thank you very
great,
much.
Great question. Thanks. All right. Any takers on the first comment? Because I think what he was saying about Iraq is really really important.
Yeah, I think it's just about the thing about Maqtada al-Sadr withdrawing his support from the parliament and from the Iraqi government, which I think we can clearly say is a puppet government. I think it's actually a positive development that al-Sadr would put up a more principled opposition to the U.S. occupation. I think we also have to be very clear when we talk about civil war, and we talk about who's responsible for the civil war. There is, I mean, people talk about, you know, ancient religious hatreds between a power struggle between Shiites and Sunnis. I think we have to be clear that what's going on here is a classic case of divide and rule by the American occupying force, because they realized when after Fallujah, when they had to flatten Fallujah to the ground to crush the insurgency, they couldn't take on Shiites and Sunnis at the same time. And they had to find ways of causing sectarian strife. And they accomplished like that because right now there are members of the Mahdi army, you know, highly sectarian Shiite force in the U.S.-backed government. And they are, you know, they're the ones going on targeting Sunni civilians. They're the ones causing the sectarian strife. I think we have to be very clear that it's the U.S. occupation that is the cause of the civil war. And if we want Iraqi people to have a chance to come together to, you know, form any kind of secular government, the first step is to, you know, immediate withdrawal of the U.S.
And to go back to a comment that Laurel made before, to open up a discussion about military recruiters, there is a debate within the anti-war movement about the question of free speech. So I just wonder if folks have thoughts about, you know, free speech for military recruiters. What do we have to say?
I guess I kind of brought this one up in the first place here just because I recalled when we as the Campus Anti-War Network were sending out emails, you know, to people, you know, asking that a group of us perhaps go out and, you know, protest against these military recruiters. I remember that I saw a lot of returned emails just pretty much saying that we were being hypocritical because we were going against, you know, the free speech of military recruiters when we ourselves were pretty much asking for people to join our cause. So I just was kind of confused on that myself. And I was wondering if anyone else here had the same thoughts or maybe had some ideas as to why we, the Campus Anti-War Network, have more right and more responsibility to be able to tell what we think about the recruiters versus what the recruiters have to say about themselves and the war.
Yeah, I think Zach has definitely got a point. And it comes down to, I guess, the truth and the being honest with what is actually going on over in Iraq. And it seems from past conversations with people who talked with recruiters that they were told very biased information that wasn't, you know, didn't even mention death and the cause of the war and why we're actually there and what they're going to be doing, who they're going to be fighting, who they're actually going to be killing, and, you know, what are these missions for? So the biasness of it is, you know, yes, they should have freedom of speech, but you have to go down to the root of this tree they're trying to sell us. And the root is, you know, to promote more killing and more death in this war. And us speaking out against that, I don't know, it seems more, we have more of a freedom of right of speech in order to, because we're telling the truth and we're trying to save people's lives. And an example of freedom of speech that was impended upon was yesterday. We were out promoting for the walkout with a bullhorn, and some policemen they approached us and said that we were going to get in trouble for disturbing the peace by speaking about peace. And it was kind of an ironic happening that we wanted to get the press down because it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, I think the question about free speech is a relatively simple one. It's one that's kind of confused a lot of people. The only kind of free speech that I'm familiar with is, you know, freedom to express your opinions without interference from the government. Mm-hmm. I think in this case, we're the United States military and the Campus Anti-War Network. They're the government. We are the people. This is a democracy, supposedly. And we have the right to say, you know, where, you know, our government uses its resources. We do not want the government spending our tax money on military recruitment and, you know, propaganda campaigns, making, you know, making the military look like it's a career opportunity, which is it is not. We are demanding, as we are, you know, a democratic movement, we're demanding how the government uses its resources. This is not about free speech because, you know, First Amendment does not protect the government's right to freedom of expression, and it protects our right to freedom of expression.
The Bill of Rights does not protect the government from its people. The Bill of Rights protects the people from its government, and I think that you're right, Paul. And the question can be confused, but I also like the comment you made in last week's meeting. The Campus Anti-War Network meets every Friday from 4 to 6, and last week, sometime between 4 and 6, Paul made a comment that I just want to repeat because I thought it was a really good one on the question of free speech, which is the thing about speech is the louder you are, the harder it is for somebody else to speak. So there's a direct relationship between our university's willingness to have military recruiters come on our campus and recruit and its willingness to bring Halliburton on campus and the CIA and the underconfidence of the Muslim community to speak out and the Arab community to speak out, because the victims of this war policy domestically, that is, constitutionally, are Arabs and Muslims who are being rounded up with, you know, face no rights to due process, etc. So the louder one sets of free speech is, they actually wind up silencing others. So it's our job to fight for our side in that equation. We got a couple of callers. Let's go straight to them, 1-2, and then we'll come back to the room with the activists from the Campus Anti-War Network planning for tomorrow's walkout.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah. Just a real quick comment. I don't know if this was already mentioned, but the national, it's called National Priorities Project, which is nationalpriorities.org, has an exceptionally good website, you know, outlining the total cost of the war. They have a map. You can click on your state, and you can then it has a breakdown per city of the cost of the war. I just looked up Madison. The total state of Wisconsin is $7,300,000,000, and per each for this, the entire city of Madison is like $270,300,000, the total cost of war so far. And I don't know what the taxpayer base is, but I think the population of Madison is around 220,000. So if we assume 150,000, which may be on the high side, that means every person has paid $1,800 for this war. And $270 million, I think, is roughly the city budget.
Great. Thank you for your comments. We have the next caller. Go ahead.
The number one business in America is death and all its byproducts, and it has been since the conception of America. Right now, Americans are the current greatest mass murderers since Genghis Khan, and you couple that with the problem of racism, which is our social economics. If you could end the war, which would not really solve the problem, because the social economics of America is racist, how then do you think that by, let's say, ending this particular conflict would solve any of the problems that exist internally in America?
It's a great question. Thank you very much, caller. Laurel.
I really, really agree with what you're saying, and originally, when I got involved in CAN, I looked at it as in, you know, yes, I really think that we need to stop this war in Iraq, but the problem is much, much bigger than that. And even if we do end the war in Iraq, this big problem of, you know, money and greed and corporations running the governments, running, you know, the modern imperialism, like, it's not going to end even if we do end the war in Iraq. And I think that a good step in the direction to ending all of this kind of downspin is just interacting with people around us. It seems like all these corporations and materialism and everything has been separating us since, you know, the establishment of America, and we are separated because we are consumers, and in that separation, that there's a loss of community, and there's a loss of caring for our brothers and sisters, and there's a loss, you know, like our economy thrives off of racism and sexism and oppression and civil wars, and you know, that's what makes our economy thrive. So in order to break that down, what we can do is turn off our TVs, you know, turn off, stop reading those terrible Hollywood magazines, and turn to your neighbor and just start actually talking to each other and working towards something that's real. Like, I just believe it's really in reestablishing that sense of community that we once had.
Yeah, I think, you know, Colette brings up a good point about, you know, this war. You know, although, you know, we are, you know, an anti-war organization that is our primary focus, you know, it's inevitable when you're talking about the war, you have to confront the question of who really runs society. You know, why is it that, you know, we live in a society where, you know, like the mass majority of people are against the war, you know, everyone's against the surge, and yet still, like, Congress has no ability to stop the surge, to try to stop the war at all. And so it brings the question, like, what kind of democracy is this? And so when you ask that question, it kind of illuminates other questions of racism, like when we saw with Katrina, you know, questions of, you know, of sexism, of poverty. Why are we the only industrialized nation without free health care? So, like, yes, we are an anti-war organization, but I think that actually, like, building an anti-war movement can help illuminate many of the other problems in our society.
We got some more callers, and I'll just remind folks out there listening, you too can join the air, 256-2001. We're talking with the campus activists of the Campus Anti-War Network, who are in red zone blitz mode for tomorrow's student walkout against the war. We're going to be rallying at 1 o'clock at Library Mall and then marching at 2 up to Senator Cole's office across the street from the State Capitol building, an office that Senator Cole is rich enough to afford but too lazy to sit in. And so we're going to go and demand that he meets with us. We have some callers. Let's bring them on the air.
Hello?
Hello. That's
Hello?
You. Yes, go ahead, caller.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I have two things to say. First, I would reinstate the draft. Please, don't get mad at me, but if there is one thing that will work and make everybody think twice before, I don't know, wrapping themselves into the flag and go to Iraq, is the draft. Second, I would like everybody to know, to find out what I found out, that the extra number of the fallen soldiers or the dead GIs in Iraq is not what we are told over TV, because in that count are not those who die in European military hospitals, or here in the United States, for that matter. So 3,200 is not the right number. It's way, way higher than that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So good luck for tomorrow, and let me know what you think about these two issues that I brought up.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I'll, about the draft there, I'd really have to say that I do agree with you, and it is kind of an ironic thing that to think, you know, should the draft be reinstated? But I've always looked at the Campus Anti-War Network's influence and opinions here on the campus. They're met with what I like to call sort of semi-apathy here. And so when I think of, you know, all the way back to the 60s and the 70s, and I think about our forefathers here at UW-Madison, a great protest school and a great documentary is the War at Home, which pretty much showcases UW-Madison's involvement.
And our foremothers.
Very true. My apologies. Yes, but basically, when I thought about the influence that the draft had on that there, I'd have to say that we would see a lot more of an anti-war movement, definitely, if the draft wasn't stated. So I'm not quite sure. I'm certainly not quite sure about your feelings toward the draft itself, but I'd have to say that just from the perspective that I think that we could get a lot more move in here if people were much more personally affected. We could end this sort of, you know, semi-apathy, which is, you know, people watching Grey's Anatomy, you know, just every night, you know. We
I love Ellen Pompeo. I'm just going to go on the record.
All right, yeah, okay. I understand. I'm just saying, well, for example, when I would go out, you know, to people in my dorm.
The phone lines are lighting up. We have a bunch of Grey's Anatomy fans.
My apologies. Okay, well, what I meant by that is that because we used to have our meetings on Thursday nights exactly when Grey's Anatomy was, and so I would attempt to get people to come to our meetings, and they'd be like, oh, that sounds great, you know, when I would see it right there. I would see this look in their eyes of just like, I understand what you're saying, and I agree that this war is bad, but Grey's Anatomy is on.
It's not real to them, and a draft would make it real.
Exactly. I think Laurel summed it up right there. Can make it real.
Paul's itching to get in on this. What's up, Paul?
I think it raises a really interesting question about how society kind of atomizes people and alienates people from, especially from politics and things that directly affects their lives. I think people would be hard-pressed to really argue that people actually care more about a television show than about the war. I don't think that's actually true. I think the difference between Campus Anti-War Network Comedian and Grey's Anatomy is that Grey's Anatomy offers a form of escape, and in a society where people are oppressed in our society, they're oppressed by the war, they're oppressed by the fact that when they graduate, they're going to be hard-pressed to find a job. And so, you know, television, music, these things are all forms of escape because people feel powerless, and they're made to feel powerless by the society that we live in. I think the responsibility of anti-war activists is to empower people to say, like, so if people could feel like they have the ability to make a change, they would say, you know, there's no way they would stay in and watch television. Mm-hmm. They would be out there with us because what we do, as we all know, is way more interesting. And
that's exactly what those corporations want, because if they make us feel powerful,
absolutely,
then the war would end.
Well, the other difference between the 1960s and today, which I think is way neglected in the conversations about how to build an anti-war movement, is the fact that, you know, today, one idea that reigns among our generation, among society generally, is that protest doesn't matter. Some form of that argument exists in so many people's heads.
They hear that all the time.
Absolutely, protest doesn't matter. Well, in 1966, it was really hard to make that argument because protests had just smashed Jim Crow segregation. You can't possibly say that protest doesn't matter in the 1960s. And so what we have is not only, we don't just want things to get so bad that people, you know, must resist. I hope we don't have to face squalor and destitution, but before people fight, there's enough people facing squalor and destitution already. What we need to show is that protest matters. And you know, there have been good examples of it. I look to the immigrant rights movement for my inspiration. You know, they stalled, Sensenbrenner's bill last year by turning out millions in the streets. Protest does work, mm-hmm, and we need more examples of it, and that's what sustaining an anti-war movement's all about. We have a couple of callers, so let's get through them quickly. Callers, I'm going to ask you to keep your comments to under a minute and try to form a question for our guests.
Hello.
Hello.
Is that me? Well, now I got a question for you. What was it, besides military defeat suffered by the United States at the hands of the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong, that effectively ended the Vietnam War? Well, it wasn't the draft. The effective defunding by Congress in about 1973, which incidentally was the year the draft was ended, was what brought the U.S. large-scale involvement to an end. But from 1965 to 72, there was a draft, and it was a very effective mechanism to maintain troop levels during Johnson's repeated escalation. So I think history is against you on this question of the draft. It's not going to they'll orchestrate it so that it's discriminatory, and I can understand the disgust and frustration over this illegal, unspeakable aggression and the widespread apathy in the face of this criminal regime's what it's done, but the draft is not the answer.
Thank you very much, caller. Let's go to the next. Wait, caller?
Hello.
There's nobody there. All right, well, we can continue talking about the draft, or we can move on to some of the other demands. What do you guys want to do? We have a caller. All right, let's get him on.
Let's resume the draft fairly where it left off in 1973. I was born in 55, and when we turned 18 in 73, we signed up and were automatically put in a holding status and never had our birth dates drawn in the lottery. We should resume at that point. I believe the fellows born in 1954 were not drafted. That's the year we should start with. People born in 1954, and then 55, and then 56, and each year move up 1 or 2 years. The other thing is with college deferments that Clinton and Cheney and others got, if they were never actually in the draft lottery facing Vietnam, then each one of them should spend 1 year in the draft lottery for every calendar year they had a draft deferment to go to college. I think that would be the fair way to resume a draft, and it should start with those of us in our 50s and 60s. We should be the cannon fodder instead of the young people.
Okay. Well, thoughts?
I think the caller makes partly a good point about it. You know, just the inherent hypocrisy of the draft, how it's something implemented by, you know, the ruling class, and like people like Dick Cheney and, you know, Paul Wolfowitz and George Bush can all, you know, they like can all buy their way out of it one way or the other. I think we should avoid the temptation of saying, oh well, if there were a draft, people would care, because we know if that were to happen, it would be on the backs of the working people, the poor people, the black people of this country, and the people who are more privileged would have no problem trying to escape it. You know, there are a number of things that could possibly, you know, make people wake up. Whatever that's mm-hmm. supposed to mean, like the, you know, the mass incarceration of Arabs and Muslims, but I wouldn't wish that on anyone. I think the, you know, our responsibility is not to wish for things to get bad, but to demonstrate to people that things can get better.
Absolutely. We have three callers. Let's go through them. And again, callers, keep it under a minute and try to form a question. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I'd like to ask a question, and that is, I agree that this war is unspeakable, it's inexcusable, and those who started it ought to be prosecuted. We have a problem. We're already in this war, and we've got a nation that is in total civil war, total chaos. While many countries have had civil war in the past, it's incumbent upon us to...
Are you milking a goat?
...to have a sense for how we're going to extricate ourselves from this war, and in so doing, not destroy millions of people potentially in the process. We don't want Iran or Syria or Saudi Arabia to get involved in this war. How are we going to do that and disengage our own troops in a process that minimizes the carnage that is otherwise going to result?
Great. Thank you very much. Let's go to the next caller. Nobody there. Next. All right.
Busy signal.
Nobody. All right. So, any thoughts? Do we want to move on to the other demands? We've only got 20 minutes left in the show, so I say we finish reading our demands of the university and Senator Cole and maybe have some discussions.
Well, I think we could take up that first caller's question briefly. Yeah. And just, I think the civil war that's developing, people talk about in terms of the Shiite-Sunni civil war, but I think that, you know, take a look at, you know, the recent developments with Muqtada al-Sadr withdrawing the support from the government. I think what we're seeing is like also a division between Shiites, between those who are, you know, complicit in the occupation, you know, the Malikis, you know, the people who are, you know, sitting pretty in the green zone, whereas, you know, there's a mass base, al-Sadr's base is in the working Shiites of Baghdad who are, you know, bearing the brunt of this war. And so what I think we're seeing here is not a division between Shiites and Sunnis so much as a division between kind of the puppets that the U.S. has propped up in Iraq and the mass majority of the Iraqi people who are opposed to the war. That's the division. The division is between those who are working with the occupiers and those who are fighting against them. The way to, you know, the obvious way to end the conflict is to, you know, withdraw the U.S. immediately and let the Iraqi people, you know, rule for themselves rather than these puppets that the U.S. has set up in their country.
We have a caller on the line. Hello.
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 Let me deviate from your prescriptions just a moment,
Is that all right?
Deviate.
Yes, because I want to connect the war in Iraq with what happened at Virginia Tech. That when you have a society that is so focused on that war in Iraq and on killing people in a certain way, and then you have somebody who comes to a dorm, kicks in the door, and shoots a couple of people, and then sort of disappears for a couple of hours. I think you have to link that together. There's one other thing, too, that people are letting the administration off very lightly. You obviously had a president that was incompetent to do what should have been done as far as notifying students, notifying employees, and making a concerted effort to focus on what was happening. Because I think there's this tendency for institutions to want to say, oh, this is an isolated incident. Oh, I think that we have handled this.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to the next caller. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, am I on the air then?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, great. Yeah, I guess the comment I have to make, and I kind of hate to put a damper in all this enthusiasm, but I think by historical precedent of about 20 to 30 years or more, I'm not really clear what is going to be accomplished other than purely symbolic by repeating the routine march from Library Mall to the square. I guess it's purely symbolic, but what really concerns me is it deludes people into thinking that they're accomplishing something when they're really not. And basically, I'll just take my answers off the air, and I'm sorry to begin on such a pessimistic note.
No, I think that you are expressing an idea that lots and lots of people have, and we need to be able to respond to, so I'll just go around. Paul, you want to respond?
Yeah, I think we do have to be clear that one march isn't going to stop the war. That's certainly true. I think a lot of people point to February 15th, 2003, where millions and millions of people were in the street, and they had the idea that this demonstration would stop the war. I think the only time that people have ever really stopped war is when the whole of society has been involved, not in just a protest, but in a movement, in a mass movement, where in all facets of society, people are resisting the war. When workers are going on strike, when students are shutting down their campuses, when soldiers are, and most importantly, I think, soldiers are laying down their arms, no war has ever been stopped successfully by the people without soldiers laying down their arms, and we saw that in Vietnam. I think, as a result, one of the most important things we can do is to support soldiers who are resisting. What I think we can accomplish with this protest is that I think that this protest can set kind of the example for future demonstrations of people that, people have occupied offices before, but in smaller groups. We plan on doing this on a mass basis, and I think we can publicize this, reach out to anti-war students all across the country, and say this is how we can begin to build a movement that can actually begin to shut down the war machine. Students taking over Congress, students taking over senators' office, things of that nature. It's not going to be one protest. It's going to be an anti-war movement that stops the war, and that's what we need to begin to build.
Laurel Franklin with the Campus Anti-War Network.
I appreciate your comment, but I have to disagree with you in that meeting at Library Mall tomorrow, Wednesday, at 1 p.m. is doing something to stop the war, and it is effective. There's no way that this war will ever stop unless the people get to come together and speak out for what is right, and they exchange ideas, and they yell, they scream for what is right. And we are going to, speak with Senator Cole. We're going to stay in his office until he comes and talks with us. And we're creating a facet and a venue for this revolution, for this movement. And even if it seems like, oh, you know, what's that going to do if I go out there? Well, it's going to do everything if we all go out there. So, you know, we're going to have a good time. We're starting this revolution, and it's going to be as effective as we can be. It's going to be great, and I think that optimism is key.
I have to say, sir, that when I first joined the Campus Anti-War Network, there were only three or four members when I joined, and when I first came in January. And so since then, we've doubled, tripled, quintupled our numbers here. And that's the whole thing that we're looking at here. If we can keep on growing, if we can keep letting people know that their voice is not going unheard, that this isn't just completely pointless. I completely agree with both Laurel and Paul in the sense that we're going to be getting out there. We're going to be showing students that they can join us, that they can have a voice, because together our voices are so much stronger than all of us just walking down different streets holding a sign. And more importantly, too, that yes, we can show the soldiers, that are having their doubts, that are worried about this war, that if they resist, we are going to support them. Lieutenant Watada, as an example, when we backed him up a few months ago, we want to be there for every soldier that says, I disagree with an unjust war. And so I think that, you know, no matter if we have 500 or 5,000 people out there tomorrow, the point is that more people, more students, more faculty members are going to see that the voice here on UW-Madison is getting stronger. Mm-hmm. And if we can continue to get stronger over time, that's where the change starts happening. As Paul says, with the continuing protest movement, not just one protest. To look back in the 60s, I mean, in that movie, I was just astounded to see Bascom Hill covered in students. I don't think any one of them thought that this was going to be over in a day. They knew that they were in for the long haul, and I think that we understand that we're in the long haul, too.
You're talking about the movie The War at Home?
That's correct.
Which we watched on the bus trip to Washington, D.C., and the March on the Pentagon. And,
brilliant movie.
You know, this is the way movements get built. The people who are here in this room, some of us have been around longer than others, but the point is that we are quintupling. Hopefully we quintuple in the next couple months, too. We have three callers, and I'm going to say those are the last three callers, so let's bring them on the air. Please keep your comments to under a minute. Try to make it a question, and then we'll end the last 5 minutes with those of us in the room here. So let's go to the callers.
Hello?
Hello.
Thank you. First of all, I'm old enough to have been in the demonstrations in the 60s.
Yes.
And first of all, the only reason they had effect because they encompassed a wide range of the people in America, the working people as well as the students. Unfortunately, today's working people, and I am one of them, who make very little money, much less than you university students will make if you successfully graduate. We have no time to be at a demonstration. I'm only able to talk to you today because I am undergoing an operation tomorrow and I am basically medically unable to work. But if I was able to work, I would be at my job for 8 hours a day,
okay,
making very little money and basically not able to protest. My question to you is that you, who have the ability to do the research, should investigate the real source of who benefits by this war. I'm talking about the oil companies who have record profits, the corporations who supply the
caller, I have to interrupt you just because we're running out of time. I'm sorry, but I think we got your question. We have two more callers, and then we only have a couple minutes left in the show. Next caller. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I just have a comment regarding all these naysayers that are coming on, saying that the march really isn't going to have any effect in stopping the war. I just want to say that essentially the president himself says that he speaks for the American people. We are the American people. This is our way of telling the president and Senator Cole that we do not support an illegitimate war. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to the last caller, and then those of us who are left will wrap up here. Hello.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, hello.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Just want to follow up from Laurel's.
Sure, go ahead.
Yep, Laurel's answer a few minutes ago about the naysayer. Please, you know, he should come out and make demonstration. I completely agree with her analysis of and her answer, analysis of the situation and her answer.
Do you have a question for our guests?
Not a question, just a comment. Kudos to you guys. And when, again, is your protest? Is tomorrow at...
1 o'clock on Wednesday, that's tomorrow, at Library Mall.
Yep, we're all coming out of class and meeting down there. Walking out if need be, that's for sure.
We've got no more callers, so we're going to just spend the last few minutes talking about the rest of the demands that we didn't get a chance to list, just so you all know what it is that we're demanding of the university. We've got a demand that there's no more CIA recruiters on campus, no more military recruitment on campus. We've actually made some headway on that one, right, Laurel?
Yes. I kind of want to hear all the demands go off.
Okay, and then we'll come back. Yeah. All right. So I'll read through. The four demands of the university under the banner of UW out of the war. The four are no military research on campus, no military recruitment, no CIA recruitment, and no Halliburton. The University of Wisconsin has a date with Halliburton on April 30th, and we're asking our administration to stand him up, leave him at the bar, sipping on the drink alone. Yeah. Depleted uranium. We demand that the military stop using depleted uranium because of all the health effects. We demand that there's money for education and not for occupation, and we have a demand on these six demands, these last six are of Senator Cole. We've demanded that all veterans receive full health benefits the way that they deserve, the kind of health benefits that are denied 47 million people in this country, which actually helps them fill their war machine because our living situations are so precarious. Money for education, not for occupation. I said that already. Iraq for Iraqis. It's a specific demand that we're making to take on the racism that's used to justify the occupation that says Iraqis can't run their own affairs. Yeah. We say out of Iraq now, and specifically now. And the last question is that of reparations, which are owed to the Iraqi people for all the money that has been stolen from them, all the oil that has been looted. So I don't know. Any of those comments that you want to respond to?
I was having a conversation with my friend the other day about just the whole money for education and money for health benefits. And I was so appalled that our country is giving the majority of our tax money to death and expecting us to put our lives on the line, yet they give, you know, little to no money to our bodies and our minds. They don't care about, you know, the knowledge of our country. They don't care about the health of our country, yet they expect us to put ourselves on the line for, you know, an illegal, racist, crazy, like, money-hungry war. It's so appalling that we are supposedly the most powerful, you know, free country in the entire world, yet our country does not give a damn about our minds and our bodies.
Yeah, I really have to say, just in terms of, you know, your comment about education, for example, I'm just looking at the fact that if we stay, you know, less informed about the situation, of course, you know, the more people learn in general, the more they want to learn. It's a basic fact of the matter. So the more money that the federal government puts towards our education, the more we're going to want to research about new subjects, and that's not going to do them any good.
Nope.
I recall back when we were marching on March 17th on the Pentagon, Fox News came up with that little statement that said that the reason why the protesters were there while they were at the Pentagon is that on their way past the Vietnam Memorial, they were going to deface it, destroy it, and that was on the air, and that was one of the reasons why we saw such a big, you know, counter protest against us, the Gathering of Eagles. I personally, and I think that, you know, my colleagues, you know, agree with me here. We have no beef with, you know, veterans of wars, you know, but we just have to wonder, you know, why they were so misinformed about this subject. Here. I mean, it would not have served any of our interests to be, you know, destroying, you know, a national symbol. I mean, it's really just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, and to say that there's some kind of hostility between anti-war activists and veterans is like saying there's a hostility between someone, you know, rescued from a burning building and the firefighters. The anti-war movement's backbone during the Vietnam War were Vietnam you know, American fighters in Vietnam, people who were laying down their weapons, soldiers, enlisted, you know, veterans who came back and formed Vietnam Veterans Against the War and all sorts of veterans peace groups. And, you know, you can't organize a war when the soldiers who are your cannon fodder are refusing to play that role. And that's the thing that George Bush and all the supporters of this war are most frightened of, and that's why we prioritize supporting those soldiers who refuse to fight.
Mm-hmm.
We've only got a last minute. I'll quickly run through what's going on tomorrow and let you know how you can get involved. We're going to be updating regularly at campusantiwar.net, which is the national website for the Campus Anti-War Network. And you've heard our demands. We're making two sets of demands, one for the university under the banner of UW Out of the War, and another set of demands for Senator Cole under the banner of Meet With Us. Here's a senator who's the richest yet refuses to even meet with his constituents. Get off your yacht, get on your private jet, come back to Madison and meet with the anti-war movement, because that's what we're demanding of you, Senator Cole. And we're going to be rallying at Library Mall at 1 o'clock. That's tomorrow, Wednesday. Anything you can do to be there is great. The thing about a walkout is anybody can do it. Walk out of wherever you are and come to Library Mall 1 o'clock tomorrow. We'll march up to the Capitol Square at 2 o'clock, go into Senator Cole's office. We're going to have a teach-in inside of Senator Cole's office, and we're going to read our demands, and we're going to make a decision from there as to what to do next. So please join us. Join the anti-war movement. Get involved with the Campus Anti-War Network if you're a student. If you're not a student, get involved with the anti-war movement in any capacity you can. So I just want to thank everybody who called in today and thank my guests.
Thank you, Chris.
See you all tomorrow. Look for the news headlines on Thursday.
We hope to see you there.
Hope to all see you there.
Don't take no prisoners if you can't afford to feed none. Don't start no fights if you cannot predict the outcome. Don't make donations where you cannot get your dough back.
WORT 89.9 FM, Madison, Wisconsin.
It's the same reported message you've been singing all along. Keep handing us the Bible while you're walking off with all the gold. The bureaucratic office sends you merry-go-rounding, while the KKK police the streets by bloodhounding. Interest on the credit card just keeps on compounding, but the FCC can never shut this pirate sound down.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now! Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts.
Being a radical, even being a revolutionary in the United States, why would somebody do that? What does it mean? What would it mean for their life, for their emotions, for their thoughts? What would the goals be? What would the methods be? Why?
Michael Albert is the founder of Z Magazine, ZNet, and South End Press. He joins us to discuss his latest book, Remembering Tomorrow, a memoir. But first, part two of our conversation with two of the country's leading dissidents, Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky, on war and resistance and about how Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz has been lobbying DePaul faculty members to oppose Norman Finkelstein's bid to receive tenure.
He launched a jihad against Norman Finkelstein simply to try to vilify and defame him in the hope that maybe what he's writing will disappear.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A memorial service is...
Thank you for listening to this free program provided by WORT Community Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. Become a listener sponsor. Donate to WORT online at WORTFM.org or call 608-256-2001 during business hours.